Hey everyone, I'm Emmanuel.
I'm Carly.
And we're two of the hosts of
The Cooler.
This week, inspired by the wildly popular Netflix documentary Wild Wild Country, we're talking about cults. Why do people join them? A special guest expert will help us answer this question and more. Oh yeah.
We'll also be finding out which songs define our entire lives, sharing some feelings about the series finale of The Americans, and nominating someone for Worst Human Alive. It's not who you think.
Chris Brown, you get a pass this time. Unless you've been living under a rock without a friend's Netflix password.
It happens.
We don't want it to happen, but sometimes it does. You probably have heard about a new documentary series called Wild Wild Country, which is about what happens when a cult from India takes over a town in Oregon, leading to arson, the country's biggest bioterror attack, no big deal, and even blended up beavers. This is real people. Watch the documentary. Here to talk about this and cults in general is friend of the podcast, Laura Shadler, who longtime listeners will probably remember from our episode titled, Will You Accept This Deep Analysis of The Bachelor? Welcome back, Laura.
Welcome, Laura.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So in addition to having a lot of opinions about The Bachelor, you also spend a lot of time researching and thinking about cults. You're even writing a novel about them.
It's true.
So what first got you hooked into this subject matter and made you want to explore deeper?
You know, I can't even quite remember where it all began, but I feel like the last decade of my life, I've just been obsessed. The first moment in pop culture that I trace it back to is Marlene May, the film with
Elizabeth Olsen.
Thank you.
How dare you?
I know. She's the best Olsen.
Mary Kate's younger sister.
And that's really where it began, at least in my conscious memory. But I feel like the idea of why do people join cults? What's going on? How does the leader of the cult get so many people to come along on this crazy ride with usually him? And it just spiraled from there. And when it came time to write my novel, it's the only thing I wanted to write about.
Yes.
I have to ask, is there a particular cult from history that you're basing the novel on?
Actually, no. And that's been really fun. It's a true hodgepodge. I've been doing really informal research, watching every bad documentary, good documentary, The Path on Hulu, you know, just every possible little cult tidbit I can get my hands on. And it's really come together as its own special fictional cult called The Totem.
So what I'm hearing here, this is basically a confession. You have invented a cult.
I've invented a cult. I mean, people have asked me if there's a fine line between writing my novel and trying to start my own cult. And I don't know.
It would work out well for you if we joined it.
Full disclosure, there is a video of Totem, this cult, with a bunch of friends of Laura's dressed up in culty vibes. And I'm in one of those videos banging like a tambourine or something.
I mean, this disclosure surprises no one.
And it also probably won't be surprising to know that I'm currently wearing all maroon/mahogany. Is this mahogany?
Like, yeah. Oxblood?
Oxblood. Yeah, all of those colors, because the members of Wild Wild Country cult, the Rajneeshis, also wear these colors. Tone on tone is what I hear it's called.
I just thought you were serving a Thursday look.
I mean, that too.
Laura, I want to ask you about the role of free will in cults, because this is something that comes up a lot about, oh, you know, my daughter got sucked in, my son didn't know what he was doing. And there is this concept of brainwashing. And one of the things that struck me about the recent Heaven's Gate podcast with Glenn Washington was that they dedicate almost an entire episode to why the concept of brainwashing, which we all take as scientific fact, might not actually be real. Why does this myth, if it is a myth, persist?
It never feels like brainwashing to me when I'm reading about a cult or watching a documentary. It feels to me like people are hearing something that they want to hear and something that they're finding persuasive or compelling in some way. Oftentimes, I think the message, and at least the initial message that people are getting, is an appealing one, perhaps. You know, when you think about the Rajneeshis, really all he was saying in the beginning is, you know, let's meditate, pay attention to your life, be present in the moment. These are things that you would hear in a yoga class today.
These are Instagram motivational quotes.
Exactly. And so in that sense, I think people get drawn in, and then depending on the cult, one thing leads to another and it gets more complicated. But it's not surprising. Now that I hear that, I don't quite buy the brainwashing notion either. So.
Yeah, it's so convenient, isn't it? It's the idea that you can totally force someone's brain to do something that it would never normally do. And I don't know, I'm wrestling with the idea that we are so attracted to this idea of brainwashing because the alternative is actually really frightening, that right. people do terrible things and make real mistakes and no one's forcing them to.
Right. And there's a cognitive dissonance that might happen, but people are making decisions where they are going along with salmonella poisoning
or blending
beaver blending, whatever the case
Spoiler
may
alert.
Be.
Spoiler alert. Someone was running on episode two.
Also, just this whole conversation made me think of a lobster in a pot of boiling water that's like slowly boiling. Mm. It's like you don't notice at first. It seems like overall message in the beginning is free love and like, let's do away with classism. And then it becomes one strange thing that you let go because everyone around you is also letting it go. And then another strange thing. Down the line, you end up looking around. You're like, who am I? And what have I got myself into? And maybe it's too late to get out without consequences.
Not to get too dark and deep, but that's kind of how all abusive relationships evolve, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's how they get you by degrees. Yeah.
And apparently cult leaders use a lot of similar emotional manipulation and tactics that, you know, abusers use within a relationship of two people, which is interesting.
Be afraid, people.
Very afraid.
So in our previous conversations, you've said that any small specific community could be considered a cult. And there is a lot of conversation these days about the word cult being judgmental or problematic. A lot of these designations are done for like political purposes. Can you talk about the decision to name certain things cults and what makes a cult?
Definitely. I think one of the most interesting things to me about cults is that no cult calls themselves a cult, right? It really is a definition that outsiders use to describe a group that typically they don't agree with whatever the group is doing. And so a lot of people say, you know, let's use a phrase like new religious movement, which certainly makes sense. And, you know, at any given time, there might be 1,000 new religious movements in the country, most of whom are not doing crazy things, and we never call them cults and we never hear about them. So cult is really a very subjective and value-laden definition to give to any group. I think it really came into like our lexicon with the People's Temple, and I think that was 1978. So after that, there was this sort of hysteria, I mean, rightfully so in some ways, around, you know, this is a cult or that is a cult. And in the Wild Wild Country documentary, it is really interesting. A lot of the members who they interviewed talk about the fact that it was a post-Jonestown thing. And so there was a different reaction to them than there might have been. So I think this idea of maybe mainstream society or whoever labeling cult is just such an interesting thing to wonder about, because that description might not always be warranted.
It's interesting you say that, because I haven't finished Wild Wild Country, but already I'm struck by the very few interviewees that they've managed to get to talk about their time with the Rajneeshis. They talk as if they're characters in their own movie. They're very hyper aware of how they are perceived, and it almost occasionally strikes you like acting. It's not, but it does. And it reminded me a lot of those kind of quite harrowing tapes you hear from the Heaven's Gate members, where they're talking about how we know how people on the outside world are perceiving us. They're probably watching this video and thinking, hey, you know, why are they doing this? And just that self-regard and that self-awareness and rejection of labels like cults. It's almost like people know what's going on, but then they don't at the same time.
Also, with the outside world branding you a cult and saying that, oh, we don't want them in our town, for someone in the cult, that just makes you connect more with the people that you're around in your cult. You're like, it is us against them. And so that happened with Wild Wild Country for sure in elections, and hence salmonella poisoning and crazy things. Again, spoiler, sorry. I could see how if I were in some group and everyone was attacking us, I would maybe put my heels in and say, you guys don't understand. You know, parents don't understand, and neither does America.
Science has proved that you bond through bitching about other people with people. That's how it works. It's how connections are forged.
That's why we're so close.
Exactly. We dislike all the same things. God, that is actually true, though.
Besties.
Well, and I think to that point, the idea, like the thing that struck me in the documentary was really how I started off very solidly on the Rajneeshis, quote, side, you know, like they wanted to farm and they wanted to be hippies in the Oregon wilderness. And I was totally on board with that. And the way that they were received initially by the local folk, you know, was so negative before they had done any of the atrocious things that they then went on to do. And so it was really interesting. It just makes you wonder if that initial rift hadn't occurred, would it have escalated to the point that it did? And exactly the dynamic you're describing of, you know, we're just here trying to sustainably farm and have open marriages and do whatever right. we want to do. And then they were getting all this judgment and even sort of, you know, violence and this like really intense reaction from more mainstream conservative people. And then one thing led to another. So it's an interesting question.
Okay, let's talk, as we so often do, about women. Yes. It's about women now. We're taking it there. I've been thinking a lot recently about the machinery of cults and how they really need and they operate on like the bodies of women, usually young women. And what I mean by that is often these kind of cultish scenarios will start out as like communal living with maybe like a free love element, which, as we know from the 60s, usually benefits dudes disproportionately. Because what happens is traditional quote unquote gender roles end up getting established, and it's women who are doing all of the kind of cooking and the cleaning in these communal living situations. And with a cult, that gets taken to some kind of crazy extreme. I just wondered if you had feelings about that.
I definitely have feelings about it, yes. so many different things pop into my mind. I mean, the first thing is this cult that's just now in the news, this NXIVM group with led by Keith Raniere.
And this is the one that the Smallville actress recently got like indicted over, right?
Yeah, she's recruiting. In big trouble.
It's serious. She was branding other women with the symbol of NXIVM.
Yeah, she was apparently like his second in command. There's an article in this last Sunday's New York Times magazine about her and the latest with the whole group. And the thing that's so interesting about them, to answer your question, is that they really kind of position themselves as being about women's empowerment, and that the whole, at least one part of what was going on, was these women within the group recruiting each other in the name of basically being badass women, was what they were calling themselves.
Come over here, there's empowerment.
Yeah, exactly. And apparently really successfully so. And, you know, there's this whole strange thing they do with something that they call collateral, which I don't think we even have time to get into, but essentially like blackmail to the members that they offer up. And then if they don't do what they're supposed to do, then there's this collateral of some kind.
Wait, that's like Scientology, right? Which may or may not be a cult.
You're going to get a mailer.
So it was interesting. The Smallville actress, one of her collateral items was that she would give Keith Raniere her child if she ever had a child.
Whoa.
Like her future unborn child. And it made me think about this idea that, you know, cults really do control women's, certainly women's bodies, women's reproduction, and whether they have children or don't have children, what happens with those children, how they can operate within relationships. Of course, the whole element of the leader of the cult having multiple women as his partners, which isn't always the case, but is often the case. So this whole dynamic is extra bad for women. I did like a very cursory Google search of like women in cults, and just like horrible things came up.
Oh, God.
As you can imagine.
I feel like that was one of the things that shocked people so much about like the Manson murders as well, that they were predominantly women, young women, committing heinous, brutal murders, the type of which you normally hear men committing. And like we still haven't gotten over that, like decades on.
We don't expect it from women in a, you know, in a stereotypical sense that we expect women to be nurturing and, you know, all these right. stereotypical things. And then we have someone like Sheila, who was OSHA's second in command. We have
In Wild Wild Country.
In Wild Wild Country. We have Allison Mack as Keith Raniere's second in command. There's a really kind of, I don't know how well known woman, but she led a cult in Australia called The Family. Her name is Anne Hamilton Byrne. And if you look her up, you will be chilled to your bone. Like, she kidnapped children. She adopted children under false pretenses. She took the children of members of the group and wanted to create, like, a master race out of these children that collected. So it was truly, like, our notions of maternal femininity gone absolutely awry.
Oh, my God. So speaking of women, most people think about cults from the 60s and 70s, and you're saying there are modern parallels seen with NXIVM and these kinds of groups. And I recently found out about a cult I don't know if you want to call it that. A group.
New religious group.
In San Francisco, and they've now moved on to 10 other cities, called One Taste. The main focus is to basically worship women, and they do that through orgasmic meditation. And that involves...
Go on.
Women getting naked, lying in a nest of pillows, and then having, quote, research partners, usually male, wearing gloves, rub on their genitals.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't say the word stimulate, which thank you. Thank you for not doing that. I was worried it was coming, and then I said it.
Yeah. And also, it ain't cheap to do this. I read this article that mentioned the dollar amounts behind all this, because it's not some place where you can just walk in, be with everyone, and get off. So apparently, if you want to be part of the group, you want to be a certified coach. And in order to do that, you need to hand over $15,000.
Wow.
And you go to conferences and workshops and all this stuff. So, yeah, that's happening here and elsewhere.
I can get a bed of pillows for a lot less than 15 grand. All joking aside, that is wild. That's happening in San Francisco now.
Yeah, it started here in 2001, and now it's branched out because people are digging it, apparently.
Well, speaking of women again...
We can't get enough.
I was thinking a lot about the parallels with like modern day fandom, about like really young women becoming so entranced and obsessed with usually male stars, like actors, musicians. And these women, well, girls, I guess, will follow these men around the world. It is not an exaggeration to say if like their favorite actor told them to jump off a cliff, they would do it.
The cult of Justin Bieber.
The cult of Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
I mean, does that check out or is that like a stretch too far, do you think?
I don't know. I like it. I can definitely see the connection, you know, because it does make me think back to the brainwashing question and just the idea of free will. You know, this idea I think that we all have of, like, of course, I'm making my own decisions and I'm not influenced by the culture around me and I'm smart and all this stuff. But the level to which we're being influenced all the time on these, you know, conscious, unconscious levels, it makes a lot of sense to me that, and especially if you think about like a young woman who is adoring of this person, and then supposedly we're saying, okay, they also have free will. It just seems to me like there's influences there that have to be accounted for. So I could see that connection.
Since we're talking about understanding people and like having compassion, that kind of brings up something else we were thinking about, empathy and lack of it, like total lack of it for people who get sucked in to these cults. You'll often find people being mocked, you know, made out to be almost kind of pathetic or weak-willed. And the reason I bring that up is because obviously Jonestown, like we record in San Francisco, Jonestown was formed here. And I mean, the fact that how it's been kind of scrubbed from the city's history is one thing, and we could talk for hours about that. But you hear this surprising lack of compassion for the people who were attracted by Jim Jones and what he had to sell, which strikes me as really weird. Like we say Kool-Aid like a punchline, like it's funny. We still say that.
She's drinking the Kool-Aid. Yeah. And most people don't even know what that comes from either. So
yeah,
to your point of erasing the history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this, you know, in some ways it comes back to this idea of, well, why do people join a cult? And if you're asking that question with a sense of empathy and thinking about it, I mean, some of the answers are pretty obvious and I think should be incredibly sympathetic. People want meaning in their lives. People want connection. People want community. You know, I think more and more with some of our modern day trends, I mean, we want ritual and ceremony in our lives in ways that we don't get. And so when people gravitate toward a quote unquote cult, you know, they're oftentimes looking for those things and finding those things. And especially before the bad stuff happens, you know, they're getting it on some level. And to me, that makes total sense. And I think that's also why I find the whole phenomenon fascinating, is that as much as we all think, well, I wouldn't join a cult, obviously, it would be clear as day what was happening. I just don't think it's really actually that clear. And, you know, people are seeking things. Certainly some of the cults, like from the 60s and 70s, it was really a time where there was that like seeking energy happening, you know, and I think it kind of is again in its own way now. If you think about contemporary versions of cults that are a little bit different, like people are still looking for some of these just fundamental human things of connection, you know, etc.
And these days we don't even talk to our neighbors or know them necessarily, and we're always in our devices, so we are separated. And if there was this community that has allegedly all the answers, that would seem alluring. Hence why I got into yoga. I went to yoga school.
Exactly. I mean, you come into a space where people are like-minded. Mm. I think especially if you want an alternative way of living, you know, you don't want to have just this conventional path that's laid out for you. And there's obviously ways that you can do that, but it can be hard. And then all of a sudden you find this community that kind of wants to do that in a way that you want to.
And like a community that wants you. Like at the start, what Jim Jones was selling with Jonestown was this vision of like an integrated church at a time when many people of color were blocked out of quote unquote traditional churches and just couldn't be a part of them. And here's some guy saying, come over here, we can all be together. That's kind of how that started. That was the sell. Obviously, people joining that and being attracted by that message did not envision that they would then end up being poisoned in French Guiana.
Right, exactly. And I think if you look at some of the images from Wild Wild Country are amazing when you look out at the crowds of people who have come to just see Osho. You know, it's wild. You don't get thousands and thousands and thousands of people coming to see you or hear you talk if you haven't said something that's at least a little bit true or interesting or compelling in some way.
And it might also partly be the phenomenon of if people line up for something, they don't even know what it is, or it's like a fake thing. Other people will start lining up just because they think something is there.
That is also British people.
Oh, okay.
We see a line, we join the back of it.
What are the bits of pop culture that have to do with cults that you guys are obsessed with?
Well, I already mentioned Martha Marcy and Marlene May, which is just one of my all-time favorites. And I'm obsessed with The Path, which I also already mentioned.
Oh, is that good?
Good.
Like, the two different things.
Define good. I think it's a super interesting examination of the stuff we've been talking about. Like, why do people believe in things? How does someone become a leader of this type of, you know, new religious movement? It's a little bit like Cult 101, but I find it very fascinating. I also just love Aaron Paul. Oh, and just so I don't say only a bad thing, only like a bad Hulu TV show. Also, The Sound of My Voice, which is a Britt Marling film from like the early 2000s, I think. And she plays a cult leader. And it's a kind of a like a faux documentary style thing about her as like, maybe she's a cult leader, maybe she's not. Do we believe her or do we not? It's awesome.
Mm. Carly?
Well, I'm glad you asked. I brought my reading list.
Oh.
I'm just going to get this out. Talking of like fiction and the fact that you were writing a novel about cults, I, like many other people, enjoyed The Girls by Emma Klein, not least because it's set like locally up in Petaluma. It is fascinating. And Emma Klein is like irritatingly young to be that talented, I have to say. But in the realms of like non-fiction, I really recommend, I know it's a cliche, but Helter Skelter, Vincent Bugliosi, who's the guy who prosecuted Manson quite successfully, I may add.
He did a great job.
Did a great job. 10 stars on Yelp, if it were possible. Also, there's a great book called 1,000 Lives by a local writer called Julia Shears about Jonestown. And it is kind of revelatory, and I cannot recommend it enough. It is also unbearably sad. Don't take it on vacation.
Oh, not a beach read.
Nope. Nope.
Well, my picks are Rosemary's Baby.
Yes.
Obsessed.
It's such a good movie.
It's good.
I was about to say that, so I'm glad someone did.
And also Suspiria, which is having a remake done by the director who did Call Me By Your Name. The original is from the 70s, and a girl goes to a ballet academy. Weird things start to happen, and turns out, spoiler alert, it's a like devilish cult that is at work there.
If someone hasn't seen Suspiria by now, shame on them.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, there's a statute of limitations.
You've had
alerts.
Decades, literal decades. And the leader of this cult is not only a woman, but a Greek woman. Representation matters.
Yes.
Hello. And she's also kind of like undead or whatever. So listeners, we've left you with a lot to read, watch, and also watch out for in the groups that you're in. Be careful. So some people learn about themselves by joining a cult. Other people learn about themselves by taking a BuzzFeed quiz. I'm a total Miranda.
Which cult should you join?
A Myers-Briggs personality test. INFP over here. That means nothing to you guys.
Blank stare.
I think I did it once. But
it means I'm gentle and a peacemaker. It's fine. Birth charts, very important. Basically, we love learning about who we are via however we can learn. And now we have a new way, if social media is to be believed. Apparently, the song that was number one on your 14th birthday defines your entire life.
What?
No big deal.
OMG.
Yes. So, because I'm a humanitarian, I looked up what those songs are for the two of you and myself.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm scared.
We're going to find out what the entire arc of our lives is going to look like.
You are the dove flying in with the olive branch made of 90s jams.
So, Carly, you're up first. You were born on New Year's Eve.
Fireworks every year.
And 14 years later, this song was number one in America.
Oh my God, I have no idea why I'm laughing so hard, but I realized that I could I could paint the entire video to that right
because
now.
Because it's your entire life.
It is. Hang on. Is it Rob Thomas feat Santana or is it Santana feat Rob Thomas?
Santana feat Rob Thomas
Thank
of
you.
Matchbox 20. And it's called Smooth and it was number one in America when you were 14 or turning 14.
Santana works so hard.
He really does.
He really does.
But I thought you might take issue with that because it's not like the best song in the world.
That is a very mild way of putting it.
So I looked up what was number one in your home country of the UK.
Oh.
So let's take a listen.
Hit me. Oh my God.
Are you excited?
Yes!
So for those who don't know what that is, which is 99% of us, it's called Seasons in the Sun.
Uh-huh.
It's a cover by Westlife, which is a boy band that's basically Backstreet Boys, only they're all white.
They're all Irish.
They're all Irish, and they have no bops.
No, well, hang on. Well,
that's not a bop.
If I could think of one off the top of my head, I would. But, oh, Westlife, they all had curtains, like curtain hairstyles, like exceedingly gelled.
I thought they were reproducing the same person in the music video as like a cool sci-fi thing, but three of them just look the exact same.
Absolutely. And also their Svengali figure is Ronan Keating from Boyzone. Yeah, that
Whoa.
Guy. Yeah. Oh, wait, you know who he is?
I do.
Oh, cool. Yeah, no, he kind of made it all happen. Their cult leader, if you will.
It all comes back. So we have these two songs. What do you think that says about your whole life?
Nothing good.
The read that I got from it is you are sensual, but you're also corny sometimes.
I mean, username checks out.
Yeah.
Sensual and corny. Same one. It me.
It's a new Twitter handle by Teacup in the Bay. Hello, sensual but corny.
I do want to retire Teacup in the Bay. It's irritating me, so it must be irritating other people. It's so twee.
It's a little bit corny.
It's a very 2018 problem.
It's a very Westlife kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, Laura, you're not getting out of this unscathed.
Okay.
On January 11th, you were born, brought into this world, brought light to all of us. I would join your cult. And on your 14th birthday, the following song was number one in the U.S. And thoughts?
That is
wow.
That is amazing. I was not expecting that. That is not what I was listening to when I was 14. Let me put it that way.
What were you listening to?
I mean, Dinosaur Jr., man, you know, Pavement.
Yeah. She's cool.
I was grungy.
So you weren't into the whole Bodyguard craze?
No. I really was like a huge snob and hated all things pop culture.
Wow.
I know.
And here you are
on a pop culture podcast.
That was also number one in the UK. And so I thought it's unfair to only give you one song. So I looked up what was number one on the dance charts, and it is the following. Kind of sinister. I'm gonna get
you,
baby. I was thinking that too. It has a culty, culty yes. vibe to it as well.
It's like more upbeat every breath you take.
Yeah, you're like dancing and then all of a sudden you're like, wait a second.
I've seen that guy before.
I'm a little freaked out.
So we have a poetic dirge, if you will, of a failed relationship by Whitney Houston. And then we have this dance hall bop about kind of like, I'm so obsessed with you, I might boil a rabbit because I'm that into you. So what do you think this theme is of your life?
I mean, I didn't quite interpret the songs that way. So I feel like I was thinking more like I like them together. You know, it's like I have a sort of romantic streak in me, you know, that like looks at the world in a sort of romantic way. So I think those songs are just, you know, supporting my poetic romantic inclinations with all things.
Yeah. And finally.
Oh, come on. Spill.
On September 25th, I was born.
Major world events.
Hey, girl. And when I turned 14, I was expecting the boy is mine is probably going to be it, and I'm going to be very happy with that. I was sorely mistaken. This is what was number one in the U.S. Don't wanna close my eyes. I don't wanna fall
asleep, 'cause I miss you, baby. And I don't wanna miss a thing. Wow.
I know. That's a lot for me to take in.
That's a lot. You just reminded me of like all the scenes from Armageddon that were featured in that Aerosmith video.
Yes.
Namely the bit where Ben Affleck makes animal crackers dance up Liv Tyler's stomach, which frankly put me off sex for a decade.
So what you're saying is my life is defined by Ben Affleck marching animal crackers into her underoos.
Indeed.
It's too much. I resist. I don't like that. So then I looked over at the UK. Maybe that can help me. And the following was number one. Wow. So if you don't know that song, you probably don't, because it did not really stand the test of time, I would say.
Not truly.
No. It is Mel B, aka Scary Spice's first solo song featuring Missy Elliott. So I like both of those people. Don't love this song.
You'd think it would be better. The enthusiasm is so low on it.
Yeah. It's like, I guess I want you back.
It's not like mine.
Yeah. Like, let's get on the dance floor. I'm going to get you, baby. Or, and none of that here. So I don't know what that says about me. Like the first one, I don't want to miss a thing. I'm certainly someone who experiences FOMO.
I think you're observant too.
Yeah.
You don't miss a thing.
Oh, thank you.
You look genuinely pleased.
And the second one, I Want You Back, I guess is like my proclivity to be nostalgic about things, even when the person wasn't that great. I'm like, oh, but remember, we held hands once. So, I don't know, maybe it just means I have a lot of feelings and I want to write them down in a journal.
I'll offer an alternative read.
Please
I think much like Missy, you like to support other people's endeavors. You like to elevate people, especially women.
Yes.
Even if you think that what they're doing isn't good, you respect that they're doing it, but you'll just stand a little bit further back and cheer them on.
We will go with that.
Yep.
And like Missy Elliott, I am also super duper fly.
I like that.
We'll go with that one.
It's the bee in the pig.
Hey, the bee in the pig. Hey.
Guys, you know what that song means. It's time for the peak and the pit. We have a guest star today who's going to bring us a peak. But first, I'm going to take you down to a pit.
Oh, boy.
And this week, it is a real pit.
It's down
It's
there.
A pity pit. Mm. It is the tale of woe of the worst man in the world. And
wow.
I know what you're thinking. You know who it is already. But I'm here to tell you, it is an army sergeant named Emil Siliers.
Who's she?
Nice try. It's a guy.
I know.
Emil just got convicted of murder in the UK. Or attempted murder, I should say. That is a legal distinction, and that is quite important.
Okay.
He did not kill the person he was trying to kill, who was his wife, Victoria. He did try to kill her twice.
Whoa.
Yeah. This story is brutal. And don't worry, nobody's dead. Victoria is still very much alive, despite his two murder attempts. The first murder attempt, he tried to kill her by leaving the gas on at their home, where not only she was, but their two kids. She had just given birth to the second one.
How rude.
Rude. Backstory, this guy was philandering and took out a life insurance policy. If you're going to want to kill someone, don't take out the life insurance policy right before you kill them. It tends to look really obvious.
He's bad at this.
He was. Well, he was bad at it the first
time. But we're glad about that.
And bad at the second time. So it didn't work. And she actually joked, are you trying to kill me?
Oh, no.
The first time. Like, honey, listen to your instincts. Right. Because the second time, his wife, Victoria, whom he was trying to kill, was a qualified parachute instructor. So she's been up in planes a bunch. She knows what it's like to jump out of airplanes. She has done this before. He decides the perfect crime will be to tamper with both of her parachutes. Because, by the way, if you're going to fall out of a plane on purpose, you have two parachutes in case your main one fails.
Or in case your husband messes with one of them.
Exactly. So he messes with both of them and her parachute fails. She has just given birth, as I said. She's just survived the murder attempt from the gas. And then he says, I've got you a present, a lovely gift.
No.
It's a parachute jump because I know how much you love parachute jumping. She accepts.
He's like, I got you a gift. You're going to be sleeping on the edge of a volcano.
It is terrifying.
Don't listen to him. Why did she not divorce him the first time?
She goes up in the plane. She jumps. Both parachutes fail. Mm. She falls 4,000 feet.
That's a lot of zeros.
Guys, she survives.
How?
4,000 feet! I'll tell you why. Because of the British agricultural industry.
What?
A farmer was out doing his job that day, and he had ploughed his field, thus making it very soft. Soft soil makes a really nice cushion when you have fallen 4,000 feet out of an aeroplane. She fell, suffered terrible injuries, but she survived. And she has just seen him be convicted of attempting to murder her quite a few times.
Wow. I am looking forward to this Netflix series about her life. She survived so much.
And the sad thing is, she said that she still can't really believe that he meant to kill her.
Oh, girl.
She says, yes, I'm hurt and angry, but can I see him as capable of murder? No. I mean, but he was, because he tried to kill you twice.
Gas. Two tampered with parachutes. What is not clear? She might join a cult. She seems susceptible.
It is a sad, sorry tale, but Mr. Emile Cilliers is now in jail for a very long time. Yeah. So,
head of the week to that guy.
If someone offers to buy you a parachute jump experience, just ask a few clarifying questions. That's my advice.
Definitely will do that. And now to help us get over that story, is Laura with a peek. Brighten our day, please.
I think I can. So my peak is about a much happier marriage.
Aw, thank goodness.
That of...
To be honest, doesn't take much.
It is the union of Philip and Elizabeth Jennings and the Americans, and their story came to an end with the series finale, and that is definitely my peak. Huge fan. If you haven't seen the Americans, start season one, episode one. Also, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the finale yet, I just have to say a few things that are definitely spoilers. Is that allowed?
Cover your ears.
So skip ahead a minute.
I was trying to think of ways to not spoil it, but it's impossible. There are these two Russian spies living in the U.S. in the 80s, and it's just an incredible show. Their marriage is a metaphor for the relationship between the U.S. and Russia. It's brilliant. And of course, this whole season, as I was watching, I was like, okay, who's going to die? She's going to die. They're setting it up for her to die. She's definitely going to die. Okay, if she doesn't die, he's going to die. Somebody's dying. Maybe one of their children.
Oof.
Definitely a death is happening. But what happened instead was just this slow burn of like a devastating series finale where their neighbor and FBI agent friend, who they've been sort of actually friends with / spying on, they have this confrontation with him parking garage. At this point, I was like weeping, like true, just sobbing. It was the saddest scene. I looked at, there was still like 45 minutes left.
Oh my God.
You're like, I can't come.
I can't deal. I was like starting to breathe funny. My husband's like, do you need me to pause the show? Like, what's wrong with you? And long story short, nobody dies. But it is really a truly devastating last episode regardless, just because of like beautiful writing, beautiful like cinematography. I mean, it truly is, I think, the best TV show ever.
Damn. Wow.
Let's just say it. I mean, wow. I'm sure someone could argue with that, but so good.
Oh, they will.
And I know. And, you know, usually, like, even a show you love, like, it concludes in some way you find fault with and you're, like, disappointed. I feel like I'm always disappointed at the end of a long, beloved show. And this was just, like, ended on the perfect note. Super sad, super smart, restrained.
And speaking of ending on a perfect note, I hear you have a few notes to play for us with a song of the week.
I do. So I want us to listen to John Mouse's song, I Want to Live. I think that if the cult in my novel had a theme song, it would be this song. He sounds like a cult leader to me in this song, and he has like some words of wisdom for us all to live by. So I think we should give that a listen.
Let's get indoctrinated.
This episode was edited by Emmanuel Hapsis with help from Ashley Ann Grigma.
All original music is by Carolyn Pennypecker Riggs.
As always, our podcast papa is David Marcus.
And special thanks to my sister from another mister, Laura Shadler, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yay. Woo! Until next time, you can find us on social media. I'm at Teacup in the Bay. Emmanuel is at Excuse My Beauty with E on Instagram, without the E on Twitter. And Laura, what are you?
I'm Laura Shadler on Twitter and Laurlia, Laurilia, on Instagram.